Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to thank our friends at Nationwide for supporting this phenomenal conversation as we have the one and only Dr. Peter Weinstein in the house. How are you, my friend?
Adam, great. So wonderful to be here. And I want to thank you, Nationwide, for the support, and not just support of me, but the support of the veterinary profession over all these years. So thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Nationwide. And we're in your backyard, by the way. We're live here in Long Beach, California. Beautiful weather. Thanks for bringing the weather.
All the best. Only the best.
It's great. So we're at Fetch Long Beach, by the way. And we're going to be chatting about mental health and the use of AI in veterinary medicine. Now, you just presented on purpose and people over profits. And how did you arrive at that philosophy? Because I do like a good talk title, but that's really good. And you know, what does it look like in action within veterinary practice?
Well, veterinary medicine is a people-driven business. There are four assumptions that I talk about when I get up in front of a group. And number one, it's people. Number two, we're a service industry, not a healthcare industry. Number three, we require a team to develop and deliver everything. And number four, it all depends on leadership. So the leadership defines what we do and why we do it. And when you ask an audience of veterinarians and team, how many of you got into veterinary medicine for the money? Nobody did. Everybody got in it for the difference that we make in the lives of pets and people, for the human-animal bond. In my opinion, people plus the passion for the profession, and a third P that we talk about is processes, doing it right each time, every time, ultimately will drive the profit. But if you try to convince people strictly to work for money, they're definitely not motivated. And it's not just in veterinary medicine, but globally, passionate is what drives people towards ultimately enjoying what they do each day and every day.
So true, really is. It's such a calling from within in this profession, which makes it so unique and wonderful. Speaking of the why in veterinary medicine, you know, you referenced Simon Sinek's Start With Why and how can veterinary leaders effectively communicate their why to teams and clients, and what impact does that have on staff motivation and retention, especially with our young generation now that we have?
Absolutely. When it comes down to why, it's really about the motivation. And the motivation is usually about the greater good. And I would suggest in many ways, it's what are we doing to give back to the community? What are we doing to strengthen and lengthen the human-animal bond? Because as veterinarians, really, that's what allows us to do what we do. Whether it's Capone and your other herd of doxies or Bruce,
yes.
From my standpoint, we do it for the patients. We do it for the clients. And so the why is really about the patients and the clients. And we need to visit that each time we get together with the team. It really should be front and center on our website. It should be in the practice and talked about all the time. And so the really is the why is that North Star. It's the direction that we go every day. And if we focus on that and we keep our team motivated towards that, and by the way, Gen Y and Gen Z and every study that's out there is not working for the money. They're working for the difference that they're making in their community and for the social difference that we make. And I think veterinarians do that each day, every day, whether we're doing free exams, whether we're doing free spays and neuters, whether we're going to senior centers and talking from that standpoint. So many veterinarians are so compassionate and so empathetic, and it's really about the drive that they have to make a difference.
Yeah. There's a new graduate in my town, and she just graduated last year, and I asked her, what made you select coming to this practice that you're at? She's like, I love the community that we created when she was a technician there. She said they do so much community events, they give back, and it was part of her giving back is, you know, being a veterinarian for where she grew up. And I just thought that was so meaningful, just exactly to your point. It was really, it solidified why she wanted to be at that practice.
Yeah, well, and let me add that Brooke, my daughter, who's also a veterinarian, is currently working at what I would call a hybrid practice. The practice shares a building with a shelter. And so she is actually doing a tremendous amount of work with shelter pets. She goes and examines the shelter pets. And so she's built this relationship from a community standpoint that has also grown her and made her a much better veterinarian, because she's also been doing a large number of surgeries and she's learning how to work with a spectrum of care in a community that doesn't necessarily have all the financial availability that other communities have. And I think veterinarians would do that. I would argue that veterinarians would work for a fair and equitable salary if they didn't have to talk about money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true, it really is. Okay, so let's talk about teams. Drawing from Jim Collins' Good to Great, you stress the importance of getting the right people on the bus and in the right seats. What practical steps can practice owners take to hire, retain, and reposition team members for long-term success?
We have a huge problem with retention and acquisition right now. Even though there is really not a bad unemployment situation, we can't seem to fill our practices with good people. And retaining people means we don't have to fill it, but we're always going to have turnover from that standpoint. So good people who can do the job and are committed to the job, those are the right people in the right seats. Now, every once in a while, we get the right people in the wrong seat that need to be coached, trained, or moved into a different seat. And then sometimes you let people on the bus that really shouldn't even be on the bus.
Yes.
And those are the people that you write a letter of recommendation to and you send them down the street to some colleague that you don't really like.
Yeah.
But hiring should be done being done all the time. We have such turnover that if you're not constantly looking for great people, you're never going to know who's going to walk through the door. I mean, many, many years ago when I did some hiring in my practice, some of the best people that I found had never worked in the veterinary profession before. And you give them a chance, you get them buying into the passion, and you train them, and you teach them, and you coax them, and you make them part of this family that we've created, and you get them in the right seats. Now, sometimes you got to twist the seat a little bit so that they fit, and sometimes we've got square pegs and round holes. But honestly, everybody working in the veterinary profession does it because they want to make a difference. And that's part of what you have to do at the beginning is go through and understand their value system, make sure that you have an understanding of how you can get them trained, and then continue training. Part of veterinary practices should be focusing on is staff retention through respect, responsibility, and recognition. Give them jobs, let them grow, give them recognition for the work that they've done, and show them respect, because this is not an easy job. There is no component of small animal or companion animal veterinary medicine or any component of veterinary medicine that's easy. It's not easy, and we have to recognize the hard work that our staffs do. There's not a veterinarian out there that wants to be a receptionist in their own practice,
yeah.
And I don't blame them.
Right. So true, really is. Those three R's so powerful. And speaking of mental health and well-being, we know it's just as important as anything else that we're just talking about. And so what strategies do you recommend for supporting mental health and well-being around veterinary teams, and how can leaders create culture that prioritizes both personal and professional fulfillment?
Well, I think it starts with what we were talking about earlier, which is purpose and having a vision and a mission and those core values. But I think one of those core values is team and taking care of your team, and whether that is providing mental health resources, whether that's providing an ear when they want to talk or need to talk to you. It's really about not ignoring what's going on around you. I was guilty of it. I wasn't always tapped in to the issues that were there. I think it's extremely important, especially if you can hire a veterinary hospital manager, to have somebody who's got their finger on the pulse of what's going on in your practice, because as practices get bigger, it's much harder to keep your finger on the pulse. It's having that awareness, it's being sensitive to it, and also, we need to bring fun back to veterinary medicine.
Yes.
I mean, listen, dentists look in one dark hole, proctologists look in another dark hole, and they look to see at each other right in the middle, but we get to play with puppies, we get to play with kittens, we get to play with foals and calves and fish and guinea pigs and gerbils and hamsters and everything else. Nobody else gets to do that. So why can't we bring fun back? And I think it starts at the top.
Mm-hmm.
I think we used to take the staff to the improv at holidays because it was something that was fun. There were times that I really wanted to just try to make everybody laugh, and I hope my staff would help me laugh, because I really do think we need to laugh at ourselves a little bit more and maybe not take ourselves so seriously.
Yeah. I mean, we go through a lot. It's hard, like you were just talking about, and emotional, physical, financial, dealing with end-of-life care, those conversations are tough. But there's, at the end of the day, there are certain things that you say. I would come home and be like, I can't make this up, but.
Right.
we have so many stories that we can share. And you really do have to enjoy with what we do, you know? That's so important. And processes and consistency. So you highlight the importance of processes for delivering consistent client and patient experiences. So share some examples of processes that transform practices you work with, and how do you balance standardization with the need for personalized care?
So let's start with something very simple. Don't call it a process. Call it a recipe. Because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Everything we do in practice can be defined in specific ways of doing it. And if we learn how to do it the right way, each time, every time, all the time, and we do it that way, we won't make mistakes. We get into trouble because we don't follow processes, and then we have to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry because I forgot to send home the prescription. I'm sorry because I forgot to give the animal a bath before it went home. I'm sorry because we forgot to turn on the oxygen before we did an anesthetic. So processes are recipes. And recipes, basically, if you do it in the same order each time, you'll get your chocolate cake. If not, you're going to get chocolate pudding. Mm. And so I'm not talking about creating robots. I'm really just talking about having a consistent way of doing things that can be modified so we don't make mistakes. We don't have time to do things twice. We're too busy in our practices. And when we do make mistakes, saying I'm sorry can have fatal consequences. Yeah. And so I really am a big advocate of trying to create systems, processes, and using checklists to ensure we do it consistently throughout. The other thing that it does is it's not necessarily about the people, but it's about the chef in the kitchen who's cooking the recipe. Yeah. And so can we create recipes that anybody on the team can do, which allows us for course cross-training, or if somebody's out, can somebody step in and read the recipe and fill in the blank as to what it would be? So we can create all sorts of processes in our practices. Oh, and most importantly, now everybody's trained to do it the same way. Because the game of training that we used to play, which was the game of telephone, mm-hmm. where we would whisper in the ear of the next hire who would whisper in the ear, just doesn't work with the expectations that clients have. A lot of the concept of systems and processes and recipes really is giving a client and the patient a consistent experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so interesting. I also talk about one team, one dream, how messaging should also be consistent. Nothing can grind our gears as a veterinarian when you make a recommendation and then they go to the technician, the pet owner's like, right, do I really need to do all monthly heartworm prevention? And maybe the technician will be like, yeah, you can skip a couple months. Oh, so just aligning on messaging and having expectations and team meetings and huddles are so important, right?
Yeah, well, that feeds into what I would call standards of care. Mm-hmm. And so you can't have three vaccination protocols and three doctors, because all that does is add to the already chaotic world that we have. And so what you're asking to do is for everybody to be singing from the same page of the hymnal and the same music. Way too often we have practices make noise but not music. Mm-hmm. Our job is to make music.
Yes, make good music too.
Mariah Carey.
Thank you, absolutely.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yes, both of them. Well, we have AI in veterinary medicine, of course. And so how do you see AI transforming clinical practice, diagnostics, and learning? What are some of the opportunities? What are some challenges for veterinary teams as they adapt to these new technologies?
Are you talking about artificial insemination or artificial intelligence?
Artificial insemination, no.
Okay.
Intelligence, Dr. Weinstein.
Oh, forget it. You're asking the wrong person about intelligence. I think with the workforce issues that we have and with the generational changes that we're seeing of younger people wanting things in a different fashion, we need to find where AI fits, artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Artificial insemination only has one place.
Different, yes, right.
Sorry.
Yes.
But we can integrate it. We're doing it more and more often in the exam rooms now with AI medical record keeping. There is all sorts of different ways to use ChatGPT and other resources to create online replies to clients, to send home information sheets. We have to not fight the future. We have to embrace it. We have to understand it. We have to learn about it. And we have to make sure that we address and meet the needs of our future clients, the Ys and the Zs, the Gen Ys and Gen Zs, who want to have an online appointment book, who don't mind talking to a chat bot to make an appointment, and who don't mind necessarily having an AI receptionist who can answer the phone and handle some basic appointment making. Diagnostically, radiology, cytology, urine analysis. There are so many different technologies that are being integrated into our practices right now that are very much accepted by the insurance companies mm-hmm. as well, that make it something that we can actually charge for and get reimbursed. I think we need to start embracing it, but we can't do it by chasing a squirrel and going after things. You have to do the research and make sure it's the right squirrel to chase.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. Because there's so many different things out there in terms of AI and vet med, but what works for one practice may not be the one best for another practice.
And I'm going to suggest that as you look to integrate AI, it's not top down. Mm-hmm. This is where you ask your team to do the research, and whether that is changing your practice management software, whether that is choosing which medical record AI program that you're going to use. The more you integrate your team into the ultimate decision making, the greater buy-in you will get from that standpoint.
I was literally just chatting with two CSRs in the exhibit hall just now, and they said, we are going to tell our owner to adopt this new AI system that's out there. And I said, see, that's how you do it. Because again, just to your point, they're the ones using it every day, the CSR, so they really want to tell their boss to get that. So great point. All right, as we're wrapping up, legacy and the next generation. You've spoken about your pride in seeing your wonderful daughter, Brooke, enter the profession and your commitment to making veterinary medicine better for future generations. What legacy do you hope to leave, and what advice do you give to young veterinarians starting their careers today?
You know, I'm at the last third of my career is the way I kind of look at it. And really the vast majority of what I'm doing now is focused on education. I'm a big advocate for independent hospital owners. I think that is, it's been the past, it's taken a side road, and I think it's the future, because the consumers, the pet owners, are so overwhelmed by big money and big corporate and big box that they really are looking for that down-home veterinarian. Now, I had the unique opportunity this year to fulfill a bucket list by going to Thirsk in the UK and visiting James Herriot's home. Wow. and his hospital there. And that was like, you know, that was a little bit of a tearjerker. Yes. Because it was James Herriot who ultimately convinced me not to become an RD, a real doctor, or a rectal doctor, but to become a veterinarian. And I think what I really want to do is I want to get young doctors to have fun. I want them to think of this as a career and not just a job. And I want them to have the balance that they're looking for in their lives. I have no problem with that. But let's make a difference in the lives of pets and people, because nobody else is doing it. We have a huge responsibility as doctors in this field to the pets and the people. And many of us are pet owners now who don't have practices. And I just want to see that we make a difference. So my legacy, if I can make the veterinary profession better going forward for the next generation, for Brooke's generation, and for the students that I have a chance to teach, I'll be happy from that standpoint. That's just really, I just want to make sure that we're making a difference and continuing the great things that veterinary medicine does.
Yeah, really fills your bucket too, especially with what you do. If those of you that don't know, fun fact, he is one of my mentors, and we talk about this in life, is to be a mentor and be a mentee. And the work that this man has given me over the years has been incredible. And in return, I pay it forward to the mentees that I have. And so it's just, that's how vet med should be and is. I really do think it's wonderful that so, but sharing that is so powerful. So thank you. Thank you for all the great work you do. This guy's awesome. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Weinstein, all the great work you do.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you to our friends at Nationwide for supporting this wonderful conversation. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.